You're listening to the audio program Host and Guest, hosted by me, Rick Katchke. Now here's myself, Rick Katchke. Welcome to this edition of Host and Guest. I'm your host, Rick Katchke, and on today's program, I'm joined by Nathan Rabin of the Onion AV Club. We'll have that interview in just a moment. I remember my first time seeing The Onion. My first exposure to it was back in fifth grade when I was in a community theater production of Oliver. There was sort of a 20-year-old hippie-ish guy in the show, and he had a copy with him, and I glanced at it, thought it was amusing, and asked him where he got it from so I would know where I could get my copies of The Onion. And he told me that he picked it up in the subway. And for years, I was confused about this because there are no subways in Milwaukee. There's no underground railroad. There's no transportation of slaves in Milwaukee. And what I realized was that he was talking about the sub sandwich chain subway and not a railroad that goes underground. And on a similar note, when I was performing at Comedy Sports here in Milwaukee, I was telling my friend Dan about it, and he got excited and asked, "Oh, does Comedy Sports still have onions?" And I was really confused by this because I didn't know if there was a point in Comedy Sports' history when they were serving onions, like they had like a special like blooming onion or something. But no, he was talking about the newspaper. So it goes to show that I really don't interpret things correctly. We'll have the interview with Nathan Rabin in just a moment. My guest on today's program is Nathan Rabin, the head writer of the Onion AV Club. He's also an author who just had his first book, The Big Rewind, a memoir brought to you by Pop Culture, published by Simon & Schuster. I spoke to him after a book reading here in Milwaukee. All right, welcome to this edition of Host and Guest. Today I'm joined by Nathan Rabin. Nathan, thanks for being on the show.
Glad to be here. I suppose I am the guest in this equation.
That would be correct. Now, you just had your memoir, The Big Rewind, come out. What prompted you to write an autobiography?
Well, it's a long and boring and circuitous story. But basically what happened was in 2004 and 2005, I was a regular on a poorly rated, mildly disreputable, basic cable movie review panel show. God, that's a tongue twister. Called Movie Club with John Ridley. And it was canceled after about 15 episodes. And it was just this amazing experience for me. It was surreal. It was colorful. It was insane. I felt like I worked with all these sort of larger than life, you know, very tempestuous figures. I just kind of wanted sort of an outlet to like kind of work through all my feelings about it, you know, to kind of have a catharsis, to like attain closure. So I wrote it would be called a book if it had been published, but it was more of a manuscript.
Manuscript.
Yeah, like kind of when a book isn't published, it becomes like a literary stillborn, like stillbirth, a literary stillbirth, you know, or a literary abortion, one of the two. I will accept both of those. So yeah, so I spent like 9 months writing this book, and I was really passionate about it, and I felt like I was growing as a writer, and I was developing, and I was like branching out. And I sent it to my agent, and he said, "Wow, this is great. This is like The Devil's Candy, sort of Julie Salomon's great book about Bonfire of the Vanities, only it's about television." And what he perhaps did not factor into the equation was that, you know, Bonfire of the Vanities, everybody knows about it. Everybody knows Bruce Willis. Everybody knows Tom Hanks. Nobody knew about my television show. So he sent it to publishers, and about 10 days later, I got an email saying, "Yeah, your book is dead, and some people really like your voice, some people really like your sense of humor, some people really like your story, some people, they just don't like you," which I appreciated, because he was a very candid sort, you know, and he was a kind of a no-bullshitter, but he said, "You know, you kind of made it part of the way, and you have these editors, they're interested in you, so why don't you write a proposal for a book that combines your story with popular culture?" So I sort of brooded for like a week and a half, and I'm like, "But I wrote a good book. Why don't you want it?" But then I thought, you know, whatever. Like, I can't be a baby, and you know, he's a very smart, very accomplished person. He knows what the market wants. So I wrote this book proposal, and it was an entirely different story. And I had like five or six editors that were interested in it, and yeah, I had kind of like phone dates with them over the course of one day, and it was very surreal because I had like five phone dates with people who wanted to publish my story, who wanted to, you know, disseminate it among the American public, put it in the bloodstream of popular culture, and then that afternoon, I went and saw Epic Movie, which I had to review. Yeah, and it just seemed so much more agonizing and so much despairing because I was coming off this incredible high. So, yeah, so I ended up going with Brent Rumble at Scribner. And it's funny, I remember he said something that I will always remember during our first conversation. It was, "You will have to do a lot to persuade me not to publish your book." So I'm like, note to self, don't screw up. So I must not have screwed up too badly. Because, yeah, he went and published the book, and he's Chuck Klosterman's editor. He represents a lot of really interesting people. And, yeah, I think he kind of got me in my aesthetic. And one of the things that was interesting was that each of the editors that I talked to had kind of like a different idea of the book, a different conception, a different idea of where it should begin and where it should end. Mm-hmm. Some wanted to forego the pop culture aspect altogether. Some wanted it to end with me getting a job at The Onion. And okay. The idea is, you know, like then, you know,
and there's room for a
yeah,
sequel.
Well, I became the, oh, and I had such delusions of grandeur that at one point I thought I would order a 3-volume set. And one would be about my adolescence, one would be about Movie Club, and then one would be about, like, everything after my adolescence. And again, it's like, geez, I don't know if, like, Stephen King could get away with that kind of a thing. Like, yeah, a relatively unknown writer sure as hell was not going to. So, yeah, that was kind of... he was the only one who said, "I want you to write the book that you describe in your book proposal." And that was very flattering, you know, mm-hmm. and I kind of put a lot of work in the book proposal. And yeah, we've had a really good relationship, and it's been, I guess, 2.5 years between when I signed my contract. And now that I'm outside of Boswell's on a Friday afternoon, or Friday evening yeah, talking to you. So it's been a long and strange journey.
Now, you have another book coming out next year.
I do. I have a book called My Year of Flops that's based on the series that I do for The Onion. And, yeah, I actually wrote the initial year, My Year of Flops, while I was writing The Big Rewind. Mm-hmm. So, as I like to say, they were kind of products of the same tainted womb. And, yeah, I felt like The Big Rewind sort of bled into My Year of Flops. And My Year of Flops bled into The Big Rewind. Yeah, I kind of developed this voice and the style mm-hmm. that I used in both of them. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. It's going to be 75% sort of golden classics in the vernacular of SCTV, and then 25% new material.
So. Now, in the series of articles, My Year of Flops, you reviewed movies, which were considered flops. Was there one that in particular you thought was unjustly a flop? And
yeah, well, two that really stick out in my imagination are Joe versus the Volcano, which, again, I saw it when I was, like, 13 years old. I'm like, okay, this movie's just kind of weird and precious, and I don't really get it. And then I saw it again, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is a wonderful, wonderful movie. And what mm-hmm. I discovered after writing the piece was a lot of people love this movie, and I had no idea it had such a huge cult following.
Yeah.
And then another movie that I really, really loved is Pennies from Heaven, which I think part of it is I'm a huge musical buff. So I really loved the way that it kind of deconstructed the musical and the way that it toyed with it and that it took, like, all the darkness sort of simmering under the surface, especially in terms of, like, the Depression, which is when it takes place, mm-hmm. And kind of fused that with this kind of escapist fantasy world. And it actually kind of ties in with my book, and that it's about a guy who literally escapes from this crushing drudgery of this Depression existence by losing himself in musicals, and to the point where, like, he enters one at one point. So those were two that I felt very, very passionately about, and I was really glad to see that readers really liked it as well. And sometimes I don't understand how many people like a movie until I write about it. Mm-hmm. So
now you've been at the Onion AV Club for
yes.
How long?
12 years.
12 years.
Next year, my Onion career will have its bar mitzvah. I didn't have a bar mitzvah, but my Onion career will have its bar mitzvah. It will become a man.
At what point did you find yourself comfortable with the voice in which you wrote about pop culture and thought, wow, I'm actually really good at this?
Well, I think a good way of phrasing this would be, when did I stop hating myself in the way that I wrote? And I think, like, the first 5 years that I worked for The Onion, I really just expected to get a tap on the shoulder and say, like, yeah, we don't really care for your... Yeah, like, this has all been a cosmic fluke, and mm-hmm. you don't deserve this job, you're 21 years old, you're not a very good writer, you begin every other sentence with "and while." And, you know, to their credit, my editors, Stephen Thompson and Keith Phipps, like, they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, and they saw kind of this raw talent and this sure. kind of spark that they could cultivate. And, God, there were Sundays we used to put the paper together, and lots of times when I was like, why do they keep me on board. I'm just not very good. And I think part of it was I worked really fast and I did a lot of work. So I was a prolific well before I had any idea what I was doing. And I've continued to be prolific, and hopefully I've picked up some skills so that volume is not the only thing I have to offer the world. So.
Now, every week on Host and Guest, we always ask for some recommendations from our guest. So first of all, a music album recommendation.
Well, one album that I really, really love this year that hasn't been getting as much press as it really should is a group called Tanya Morgan. And they have an album called Brooklyn Addy, and it's a really cute story where they're like some very sweet young African-American men who kind of grew up on, you know, a tribe called Quest and the Roots and like all the stuff that I'm very near and dear to my heart. And they actually met on the OK Player message boards. Which is such a cute, geeky way for, like, a rap group to come together. And, like, some of them were living in Brooklyn and some of them were in Cincinnati, and they kind of joined forces. And sure. They put it some. And, like their first album. This one, I think, is kind of their masterpiece, where they kind of put all the different elements together. So that's a big favorite of mine. And then on movie-wise, there's a film called Hump Day that just came out that I really, really like. It's about these two heterosexual men who are kind of at a crossroads in their life and their emotional development. So they decide that they'll shake things up by doing a gay sex tape together. And it sounds really gimmicky and kind of forced and like, oh, that's like Zach and Mary make a porno or something. Yeah. But it just plays really, really naturalistically. And it's just very funny and very sweet and very true to life. And you feel like these characters actually exist, and they existed before the movie and they'll exist after the movie. And you feel like you've kind of gotten a voyeuristic glimpse into, you know, like one little chapter of their lives. So, yeah, I'm a big, big fan of that. There's also a movie coming out in August named Big Fan that was written and directed by a friend of mine, Rob Siegel. And it stars Patton Oswalt, who's an obsessed New York Giants fan. And that is just a brilliant, brilliant movie. And I got completely hammered at Sundance at the at the premiere party. But I've never been prouder of a film that I had nothing to do with. I'm like, my friends made a masterpiece. They're so awesome. And just from Madison, it's such a huge, you know, jump from that to, you know, partying at Sundance.
Sure.
It's like, we've come a long way, baby.
Now, you mentioned that you're a huge musical fan.
Yes.
Is there a musical that stands out as your favorite?
That's a good one. God, there are a number. I'm really fond of a movie called Good News.
Okay.
It's always fair weather. There's a screenwriting team of, I don't know if it's Adolf or Albert Comden and Betty Green, but they were these brilliant, brilliant screenwriters. They wrote some of the funniest and sharpest and most satirical screenplays of all time,
sure.
One of which was Good News. Another, which is not terribly satirical, but is a whole lot of fun. They wrote Singing in the Rain. They wrote It's Always Fair Weather, which is kind of a sort of sequel to Anchors Away, which is another great, great musical. But the thing that's interesting about it is Anchors Away has, like, full of youth and vigor and pep, and it's very optimistic. And, you know, It's Always Fair Weather isn't an official sequel, but it follows characters who are like the ones in the first movie. And they've all become kind of sad and bitter and disillusioned. And, you know, this is a 50s musical.
Yeah.
And there's just this raging cynicism and this kind of underlying current of, like, the American dream is a lie and these guys believed in something. And, you know, they were buddies. And I think one of the things that makes it so heartbreaking is that they were buddies, you know, and then they reunite, you know, 10 years later, 5 years later. And they kind of hate each other. And they don't have anything in common. They don't have, you know, I think they were all sailors beforehand. And without this thing to unite them and to bond them, you know, they just find out that, you know, they're like strangers to each other, and they kind of bond over the course of the film. But again, there's just this raging cynicism that is really bracing and really contemporary and really kind of shocking, even today.
Nathan, is there anything else that you have coming up that you would like to promote?
Well, I'm shameless, but not that I can really think of. I'm doing the series called Nashville or Bust on evclub.com. I'm doing a variety show with Joey Heatherton, the UCLA football squad. John Madden's going to be involved. That'll be on ABC on Saturday nights coming in the fall. Line of perfume, line of cologne, line of dog food.
About time.
Yeah, well, you know, it's about time I diversified the Nathan Rabin brand. You know, it stands for quality. It's sexy. It's continental. It's something that we can all it's aspirational brand. It's, and like a lot of these products are priced way out of the range of all but the wealthiest people in the world, but I think that motivates them. Like, if you buy my cologne, it's over $1,000, but, you know, you're gonna work harder because you want to buy Nathan Rabin Desperation for Men. So yeah, be on the lookout for Desperation for Men. It's very expensive, it's not really worth it, but if it motivates some people, then everything is good.
Nathan, thanks so much for being on Host and Guest.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Nathan for joining me on the program. I highly recommend his book, The Big Rewind, a very enjoyable, quick read. And all of his work at the AV Club is fantastic, so if you aren't already checking that out, be sure to do so. I've been your host, Rick Katchke. Our theme music at the end is done by Tiny Folk. You can listen to all of his music for free at Last.fm. Thanks for putting up with my sick-sounding voice, and thanks for listening to Host and Guest.
Yes.